Listening to Echolocation, the show that explores the artful sound of the natural world. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lou Judas, and right now we're tuned into the Weather Warlock at the Wave Farm. The Weather Warlock is an analog synthesizer that's played by the signals sent by sensors, which monitor changes in temperature, precipitation, and atmospheric conditions, right outside of the Wave Farm Study Center. And the instrument was invented by experimental musician Quintron. And there are weather warlocks installed in different parts of the globe, but there's one installed at the Wave Farm Study Center. And over the summer, I got a chance to check it out. And it's a really cool retro box equipped with dials and knobs that you can manipulate to actually play the weather. Quintron and the Weather Warlock were profiled in a piece by Leith Tamino that appeared in Orion magazine, and I just wanted to share a few short quotes attributed to Quintron from the article. "I wanted to make music that feels like looking at a fire or staring at waves, something where it's repetitive and the same, but always fluctuating and bubbling with unexpected differences." And then another quote is, "What happens when we take away the human beings, the artistic choice to play this or that? What happens when an instrument's not being played by anybody with any sort of emotion or desire, when it's just kind of being plucked by blind, random weather fairies?" And if you're intrigued by these sounds of the Weather Warlock, you can stream it live and listen to the random weather fairies that hang out at the Wave Farm by tuning into the Wave Farm website. And you can also search for Quintron to find all sorts of opportunities to hear about and to hear the Weather Warlock in performance. Today's show is all about the sound of weather, pretty much. And to state the obvious, we're heading into fall, it's getting colder, and the cold weather and shorter days really affect the soundscape around these parts. The migratory birds have mostly flown the coop, and the amorous frogs have done all their mating, and they're silently awaiting winter. And sometimes it feels like the only sound left in the late summer and early fall come from insects. Insects are kind of the last songsters of summer, especially the crickets. You may have heard that you can tell the outdoor temperature by counting the chirps of crickets. Well, that's actually true. Male crickets rub their legs or wings together to make those chirps. And because crickets are cold-blooded, their activity level responds to the air temperature. So when it cools down, their chirps slow down. According to the old Farmer's Almanac, to convert cricket chirps to degrees Fahrenheit, count the number of chirps in 14 seconds and then add 40 to get the temperature. And if you're in any other part of the world besides the US, to convert cricket chirps to degrees Celsius, count the number of chirps in 25 seconds, divide by 3, and then add 4 to get the temperature. We're going to take a listen to sounds from storms that are associated with warmer weather, like tornadoes and hurricanes, both of which have been compared to the sound of freight trains. A tornado, of course, is a vortex of rotating winds that appear like a funnel-shaped cloud which advances beneath a large storm system. Rapidly rotating air is noisy, and people can hear the sound of the funnel even when it's aloft. The vortex can almost sing as it reacts to changing conditions. Once tornadoes touch down to Earth, they cause devastating damage and are very loud. Turbulence, debris, and structures and trees all affect the sound. The terrifying sound of a tornado has been described as a long, continuous rumble, a jet engine, or a deafening roar, or a freight train. There were stories in the news this year about the sounds tornadoes make that we can't hear, the infrasounds. A story by Rachel Hubbard that aired on NPR in June explores the research of Brian Elbing, who teaches mechanical and aerospace engineering at Oklahoma State University. He's studying the sound of a tornado that is just below the human hearing range, the infrasound. His hypothesis is that the infrasound is caused by pressure fluctuations in the middle of a tornado, and he believes the study of infrasound of a tornado may help make tornado warnings more accurate. For example, the amplitude of the sound might predict the strength of the tornado in real time. Elbing is using microphones to listen for infrasound and has been able to detect the signal of a twister miles away. And the infrasound of hurricanes are also being studied for use as another method of prediction. Torrential rains and whipping winds of hurricanes get really noisy. Hurricanes can generate winds of more than 160 miles per hour, which whip up waves on the sea surface. When one ocean wave slams into another, the collision results in a low-frequency sound wave that can be picked up by scientific instruments thousands of miles away. And the infrasound system signals are known as microbarons. The strongest infrasound signals come from the storm center and can be used to track storms. But no matter what a hurricane sounds like outside of our hearing range, witnesses say when it hits, it sounds like a freight train. The effects of a hurricane can seem like a train wreck, and we're still in hurricane season, and we've just witnessed the incredible damage that Florence wrought on the Carolinas. According to the Union of Concerned Scientists, recent research suggests that the intensity of hurricane activities has been increasing since the 1970s. Since the mid-70s, the number of hurricanes that reach Category 4 and 5 has roughly doubled. Global warming is fueling the stronger winds and higher precipitation seen in recent hurricanes. Rising ocean temperatures have been linked to intensification of hurricanes, and sea level rise and storm surge are exacerbating flooding in coastal areas. The risk of flooding on the coast is even greater if the storms make landfall during high tides. We're now going to listen to a piece called Resting Storm by the ensemble Earth Sound.
Glaciers that I've known now for almost 30 years, that I've known now. And they're retreating and retreating so fast.
When you look out at the ocean, it's closer than it ever was.
That I've known now.
Winters are not normal.
30 years. Glaciers are leaving me. They're leaving us.
We've had to adapt whenever the temperatures or the flooding or the erosion happens.
It's such a beautiful place. Such a beautiful place.
Our land, our ocean is part of the people. And we are the people we are because of it.
Thank you.
We just listened to a composition called Resting Storm by the Earth Sound Ensemble. The piece was composed by Jason Davis, who is the mastermind behind the Climate Stories Project. And the Climate Stories Project is an educational and artistic forum for sharing stories about personal and community responses to climate change. The project has several components, including audio pieces produced from everyday people sharing their stories about climate change, a training for high school and college students on creating climate stories, workshops for teachers and professionals, and climate music, which is a blending of oral history, natural sound, and music to create compelling narratives about how climate change is affecting individuals and communities now. Jason Davis is a musician, environmental educator, and leader of the Environmental Sound Improvisation Ensemble Earth Sound. He's blended his interest in music, the environment, and oral history through the Climate Stories Project, which also features what he dubs climate music. And Resting Storm is an example of this. Originally from the Boston area, Davis is currently earning a PhD at McGill University. His research projects are related to the Climate Stories Project. I interviewed Jason Davis the other day, and he shared his inspiration for the multidisciplinary approach that blends narrative and voices with music.
There's a piece by a composer named Steve Reich. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
No.
He's a pretty well-known, like, contemporary classical composer. And he's written several pieces where he takes recorded voice and writes music that incorporates that into the piece. And it's very integrated. Like, so he actually takes like the rhythm of people's voice, the pitches, and turns that into music, and instruments play along with that.
Oh, cool.
So his most famous piece is called Different Trains. His most famous piece using this technique is called Different Trains. And it's a very powerful piece. He takes oral history from people he grew up with. Like, he grew up traveling on a train from New York to Los Angeles as a kid, like, many times. And he got to know, like, some of the people that worked on these trains. They're no longer running. But he talked to them and got their story about what it was like to work on the trains and the whole experiences they had around that. And then the Different Trains part is, at the same time he was traveling on these trains, it was the Holocaust.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, so there are different trains, obviously, in Europe. And he didn't interview them, but he got archived recordings of Holocaust survivors who were interviewed and telling their stories. So he used the stories from three survivors. And it's like little clips. So if you listen to the piece, you don't hear long stretches of interview, you hear like his little fragments of speech, and he turns them into music. So when I heard that and I thought about oral history, music, and climate change, I've been interested in for a long time. I thought, I'm going to try to put these together in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of grew from that. You know, it was like an experiment. It's still kind of an experiment. And then at the same time, the project also grew into an educational project. So I just was trying to find a way to help students approach climate change, not only from the scientific background, but also the narrative, people's stories, you know, and also the interviewing piece. Like, I was so into interviewing, I thought I could share this with students and help them learn this skill or technique and help them get the communication going between, like, their generation and older generations, different cultures. So it kind of, it's all in this sort of messy circle right now, but it's it all fits together in my mind anyway.
And was that, whereas the work that you've done with students, has that been in the Boston area?
I think it's been 7 schools so far. Several, like, around Boston, like UMass Lowell. An intern who was working for me did one outside of New York City in Hastings-on-Hudson. That was a couple of years ago. I've also done them remotely. Like, I did it with a school in Anchorage, Alaska.
There was
a school in Connecticut called Common Ground School. There was a kind of environmental school for high school students called Chewonki, which is in Maine.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it's really varied. It's been different schools. You know, some are colleges, some are high schools. And I've also done, like, some workshops. Like, there's a thing in Adirondacks called the Youth Climate Summit, which has gotten pretty big. It happens now every year. So I've presented workshops there for the students who are just there for that short period of time. So it's been a variety of different settings.
That's really interesting. So how long have you been doing the Climate Stories project?
Well, starting with the music, just the music stuff, it was 2013.
Okay.
It's been about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then the educational stuff started the next year. I did a fellowship program called Community Climate Change Education, and it was funded by EPA, and it was 26 of us, I think, all the different climate change education projects. We got to meet up and learn from each other, and we presented our work at the North American Association for Environmental Education Conference.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a cool network of people, and I used that to help me build this education project and some of the materials I use, and ended up actually interviewing a lot of the other fellows in this program for the project.
Wow. So how did you find some of your the people that you've interviewed for the project? Like, what's that process like?
Yeah, I mean, it's really varied. So like I just said, some of them have been people I worked with. So these are the other fellows in this fellowship program. And it was very easy to talk to them because obviously they're already working with climate change. We were in close contact. Other people have been just like kind of recommendations. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, it's mostly been that, like, I'll talk to someone, maybe I'll do an interview with someone, they'll know, my friend, my uncle also wants to be interviewed. When I was in Alaska in this town called Shishmaref, that was very direct because I was working with high school students there, and they were doing a lot of interviews, and it was like their relatives, you know, so their grandparents, their aunts and uncles, their parents. I did some of them too, but it was very, like, contained in that case. Just in one small town.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a lot of different ways that it's happened. You know, one of the things I'm working on now is just more outreach. So I've just started working with a new person who's helping me do this outreach and find other people to interview. I mean, I was kind of naive at the beginning of the project. I thought, okay, I'm gonna build this website. I'm gonna have a link on the website that you can record your own story and send it. I'm just gonna get flooded with stories, but it hasn't happened like that. I got actually a couple like that, but almost all of them I've solicited in some way. So it's either been me recording them or students in the workshops who've recorded them.
Uh-huh. And then in terms of how you compose, just curious about what that process is like. Like, do you have the music in mind first, or are you listening to the story first? In how you compose with the stories?
It's also varied quite a bit. Some of it's like imagery. So probably the clearest example is the piece. So this guy, John Sinek, has been probably the most interesting interview I've done. Super interesting. This is an elder in Shishmaref, indigenous elder. And he's lived there his whole life. So he has a lot of details to talk about the change of climate. And things most of us wouldn't notice, like, for example, the big one was the way the snow sounds. Like, just he's noticed over the years that it's actually changed. When he was a child or younger, it was colder. So the snow, when people walked in it, the snow made a different kind of sound. Like, it was a crunchier sound. And now when he's gotten older, he's noticed that it's a softer kind of a sound. So, you know, as a musician, that immediately spoke to me as some kind of imagery sound around climate change. So then when I composed the piece I called John Sinek, I wanted to include that in a way that had a little like a footstep motive that went with his narrative. So that was pretty direct. What the words he was saying with some kind of image. Other times it's just been like a real general feeling. Like for that piece also, I was trying to capture something of like the openness of the landscape. You know, there's no trees. It's tundra, this ocean, there's this open expanse of land. And so something about that feeling spoke to me in terms of how that music was going to sound open. You know, it wasn't going to be super dense. It was going to have kind of this space to it. And unlike Steve Reich, who's the composer I was talking about before, who's used the voice samples very, very tightly with the music, where it's like literally notes that the people are, like, it's called speech melody. So you can actually very carefully analyze like someone's speech and pull out pitches that they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a technique. He's not the only one. A bunch of composers have used this where they write music that very directly imitates the speech. So it has a certain like effect. You know, the rhythm is built around the cadence of the speech and the pitches that are around the speech melody. I haven't done that at least very much. I've experimented with that, but it's been much more of like just the imagery or just giving the music surrounding it the space to incorporate that voice sample. So it's a little bit looser than a composer like Steve Reich has done. So sometimes it started with the music, and like, for example, that piece, Resting Storm, mm-hmm. that she wanted to share, that piece started out with no voice at all. Oh. It was like, it was already a done piece. And then I went back to it and I opened up these sections where the voice would fit. It's just taken a lot of different turns. You know, I definitely don't consider myself like an expert at this process, and part of what I'm studying for my degree here is different ways of doing this. You know, so other people have done it different ways. How can I experiment with this incorporation of voice into music? So anyway, the research I'm doing is focused on a couple areas. So one of them is this methodology of like taking speech and incorporating that into music in different ways. So whether that's like composed music or improvised music, there's a lot of possibilities to do that. So that's one part. The other part with the climate change is not really musically related directly. It's more about narrative and oral history. So, you know, now that climate change is happening so quickly and so obviously, it's become a real possibility to actually speak with people about their own oral history of like comparing when they were younger or experience in their hometown. So it's turned into kind of a field of inquiry. And I also am interested in contrasting that with maybe more of like a Western science perspective, which is more, you know, ostensibly objective and looking at the whole globe, you know, or a whole region, you know, maybe a much longer time frame. So like, why is that? What's the difference between someone like John Sinek, who can talk about this very detailed story about the sound of snow, versus a climatologist who might talk about, you know, snow cover in the Arctic over 50 years? They're both super valid, but they intersect in a kind of interesting way. And the other piece of this is a lot of composers have used more of the data side of things. It's called data sonification.
Yep.
So that's been, it's pretty well established, not just with climate data, but other types of data. But it's sort of taken off in the climate music field, if you want to call it that, where a composer will take temperature data for the past 100 years and assign pitches to each degree change of temperature, and you get music out of that.
Yeah.
One of the questions I'm interested in is like, what does that say about our relationship with environmental change? You know, is it through narrative or is it through numbers? It could be through both, right? So all that hopefully will fit into my dissertation. The emotive quality of music is something I hope will engage people. You know, so writing music that tells a story and incorporates people's voices about the changing climate, I hope will help people, help the audiences feel something maybe that they didn't feel previously, or just open their mind a little bit, you know, so if they can then think about their own stories more easily than if they just, you know, read a written out description of the story or, there's many ways, right? For some people, like, data is super powerful motivator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, even for me, I remember looking at, you know, that famous graph with the CO2 level and the temperature over time, and it's like, okay, there it is. You know, you can't really deny that, or it's powerful. It's a powerful graph, you know, in and of itself. So different people respond to different things. And for me, the narrative and music is very compelling. So I think it's just a personal choice to pursue that angle.
So I guess the other question that I had for you, and you've answered it a little bit, but I'll ask it again more explicitly, is what do you hope that the result of your work is?
Yeah, I mean, it's multi, there's a lot of aspects to it. So like for the education workshops, it's the students will come away feeling more engaged and more able to talk about climate change, because it's often something that people don't talk about. You know, it's kind of this, it's a little far to say it's taboo, but it's certainly not a normal conversation topic. You know, it's kind of, it can be a little difficult and maybe depressing, you know, but I think giving it the framework of talking about stories makes it a little more approachable just to hear people's own experience and even the way they're responding to it. So sometimes they might hear, I don't usually like to use the term solution, but I mean a response, like a proactive response, whether that's, you know, changing the type of farming techniques that people are using, building with different kinds of houses. Like I've heard all kinds of things that people are doing now because they have to adapt. So even those kind of stories, I think, give people something to hold on to. That's not just like if you just talk about climate change as a global thing, I think it can feel overwhelming because it's just like, it's kind of this very distant thing. It's obviously very powerful, but it's like, I think it can be very hard for people to relate to that in a way that really intersects with their life. But if like a student is talking with someone in coastal Alaska and their village is disappearing and they're moving, you know, it's like, it really is very relevant. It's very direct, you know, and I think people can make the connections better with that directness. And then with the music, it's kind of like I was talking about, like, I feel like it's a mode of expression that works in a different way than just like reading. I mean, now I'm reading all the time. Like every day there's a news story about someone like in, you know, North Carolina with the hurricanes there. Just reading a story about people in like New York City, you know, that are having to think about flooding now in the way that they haven't before. And even like things like it's, you know, certain places are getting an influx of almost like migrants or refugees, if you want to call it that, because of climate change. Like Phoenix is getting, in a way, like too hot to live in. Mm-hmm. So the story was about a city called Flagstaff in Arizona, where a lot of people are moving to. Maybe they're not directly making the connection, but they know it's getting hotter. So every day you can read written stories, and they're great. They're very powerful. But I think for me, the music piece of it adds another dimension, which is not so much, you know, verbal or written. It's more emotional, you know, more sound based. And I hope that communicates in a different way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like engagement. You know, that's the key. I don't have any pretension of like changing people's minds. You know, especially in the U.S., there's like there's still an idea of like a debate. You know, it's so in my mind like stuck. You know, it's stuck in the past, and there's a reason. There's many reasons why this still is kicking around, but. You know, I don't think if I sit down someone who's convinced that climate change is not happening and I play them a piece of music that I've written, I don't think they're going to suddenly change their mind. But I do think there's a lot of people, many, many people who are aware of what's going on with the climate but aren't really engaged with it. Like it's just kind of this very peripheral piece. And so maybe if someone hears a piece of music that incorporates these stories, they might suddenly just have a little shift in their relationship with the changing climate. It's no longer just an abstract idea. It's actually like more of a real thing, and it's something that they can engage with like emotionally.
Yeah.
So that's the main idea.
And even I think there's so much, there's at least, I think it's less so now, but there's been this such an idea that climate change is in the future and that
right.
It will impact the future. But I think one of the things that's so powerful about your project is it brings it to the now. So people are talking about how now they are being impacted. And I think the
exactly.
more you
yeah.
hear stories like that, the more it sort of puts into people's mind, how is this actually impacting me now? Which
exactly.
shifts the narrative because it's so hard to think 30 years or 40 years or 50 years into the future. But if you see it as a current issue in your life, it changes how you react to it, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and it's just becoming so much more of an issue. Like every day it seems to be more present, you know, where people are making those connections. And it's just becoming obvious. You know, like people can say, wow, like this hurricane is really different than what we've had in the past. Yes, it's been storms forever, but this one, something's changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's become much more of a direct thing. And you know, it's kind of surprising. When I was a kid, the kind of talk, the discussion around this was always like 2050. That was the year that things were going to be noticeable. Nobody was talking about 2015, 2018. So it's advanced much quicker than scientists expected, much quicker. So that's pushed it to the you know, to a present day event where in the past it really was something that people could sort of say, like, well, you know, in my grandkids' generation, they'll have to deal with this thing, and this, you know, maybe it's easier to kind of forget about or dismiss. But now it's really become, I mean, I live in Montreal, and just this past, we had this incredible heat wave this past summer. It was a record temperature and like how long it lasted. So even here, you know, it's not just in coastal areas or tropical, you know, deserts. It's the whole world now is really experiencing something. Yeah. You can pretty much go anywhere and you have something to talk about that's different, that's changing.
Yep. Is there anything that you would like to add? Anything I didn't hit with my questions?
Well, I mean, I guess if you want to talk a little bit about my plan. So what I'm starting to write now is a longer piece of music, which is going to be a suite, like 30 minutes or so. And it's going to have, it's just going to be, I hope to be more developed. So like the pieces I've written so far have been pretty short, but I want to do like a longer piece that's going to have kind of like an arc, like a story arc, you know, so it could bring people from one story to the next in kind of this connected way. So that's something I'm working on over the next year or so. So the project, I hope I'll keep developing it. And, you know, I'd love to see other people excited about this. You know, one thing I'm really, really trying to do is share the workshop model with other people all over the country or the world. So, you know, I don't want it to be my project. I want this to be something that just is a normal way of teaching climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So if a teacher is teaching about climatology or just the big picture science, they'll know about this approach, and so they'll think about, hey, maybe if we invite this person who's lived in this hometown that I'm teaching in for their whole lives, they probably have something to share. Maybe they'll reach out to that person, invite them into their classroom, you know, or set up some kind of a workshop with them. So it's, I just hope that approach becomes like something widespread.
When I was young, when I was young, we have always had north wind. We have always had north wind all the time. Have blizzards, and we would have blizzards, and cold north winds for a good month. Cold north winds for a good month. And it would be like that for a long time. And it would be like that for a long time. But after that, the snow gets so cold. The snow gets so cold that you can hear people walking outside. Hear their footsteps outside. Nowadays, it doesn't get that hard anymore where you can hear people walking past. The snow doesn't get that hard dry anymore like it used to. When I was young, we have always had north wind all the time.
You are listening to Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM and wavefarm.org. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lo Judas. We just heard the composition Footsteps in the Snow, which features John Sinek, the Alaskan gentleman that Jason Davis mentioned during our interview. Thanks so much to Jason for taking the time to share his insights and his work with us. You can visit the Climate Stories website at climatestoriesproject.org. Check out climate stories from people living in different locations all over the world, including the Hudson Valley. You can also contribute your own climate story, so consider participating. During the interview, Jason mentioned that his inspiration for climate music came from the work Different Trains by composer Steve Reich. We're going to wrap up this first hour of the show by listening to part one of Different Trains, performed by the Kronos Quartet and Pat Metheny. New York to Los Angeles.
trained.
Thanks for listening to Echolocation Storm Surge Sounding, our fall 2018 broadcast. And stay tuned for hour two, when we'll be exploring the sounds of some cold weather phenomena and, of course, of the wind.